Case number 13-1132, Independent Producers Group Appellant v. Library of Congress, et al. Mr. Boydston for the appellant, Ms. McNeil for the appellees.
Good morning.
May it please the Court. IPG is here today based upon a decision by the Copyright Royalty Board to essentially enforce the terms of an agreement that IPG contends it never entered. This came to a head in August of 2012 when the Real Parties in Interest, the settling devotional claimants, filed a motion along with others to ask the librarian to enter a order for a final distribution of the 2008, cable royalty fund. When that motion was filed, IPG learned for the first time that it was the contention of the settling devotional claimants that IPG had settled away its 1998 claims in that pool.
Did you have actual notice of this settlement?
No.
Any time before this?
No, we didn't. The first time we learned.
Were you aware that a check had been sent and cashed?
No, we were not. Now, I guess if I may put a small asterisk on that, at the time the settlement was entered into, allegedly, in 2003, there was an ownership dispute in IPG. IPG has not been riven by ownership disputes, but there was one at that time. And at that time, it appears from documents that have been shown to us since then, in redacted form, but still we have seen, that an individual who was a former owner, part owner, minority owner of IPG, Marion Uchida, apparently signed an agreement. Now, at the time that was going on, IPG's majority owner, who happened to be represented by me at the time, made it very clear to all and sundry that it could, that Marion Uchida did not have authority to unilaterally bind IPG.
Because all this seems like a dispute you should, as you did already in the California case, go sort out between you and Marion Uchida and whatever, and if someone owes you damages, they owe you damages, but I'm not sure why.
Excellent point.
This is the place to fight that battle.
Well, here's the thing. We didn't know about this 2003 bogus settlement, what I characterize as a bogus settlement. We didn't know about it until it came out in the reply to our opposition to this motion in August that was filed in August 2012. That's why we didn't do anything about it sooner, because we didn't know about it. We didn't know that Marion Uchida had ostensibly or arguably apparently did put her name on an agreement back in 2003. No one gave us notice of it. And it's also curious.
I mean, you waited an awful long time.
No, we didn't wait at all.
1998, right? This is 1998 money we're fighting about.
No, but we didn't know that there had been a settlement, a bogus settlement.
You knew the government had a pile of money from 1998. Either it had been distributed or it had not, but either way, there's a pile of money from 1998.
No question. We knew that. We did not know that there had been a bogus settlement.
Well, I got that, but then if you didn't know there was a settlement, why weren't you off trying to get your share of the settlement a lot sooner than 2011 or 2012?
Because it wasn't until 2008 that the Copyright Royalty Board said, we are now going to adjudicate these matters. At that point, the adjudication began. We assumed, actually, I take that back. This particular one, it was not announced. There was no announcement of an adjudication of this amount. None that we got any notice of. We didn't wait at all. The first instance that we knew about any of this was in the aftermath of the filing of the August 2012 motion to declare a final distribution. Now, perhaps you're getting confused because one of the things that the CRB ultimately based its decision on that we're appealing here was the CRB said, well, wait, back in 2003, the librarian entered an order saying that the 98 cable distributions are all resolved. We never got served that. It was also never published in the Federal Register. We had no idea about that order, again, until 2012 when the motion to also make a final distribution order for the same year was given to us. And was given. We had notice then. We said, what is this? What's going on? We have no idea. We don't know what's going on here. Now, the fact of the matter is this. Our beef is that we said all this to the court, to the CRB, and the CRB simply said, no, forget it. It was a long time ago. Never mind. We're sitting here saying, wait a minute. You're entering a final distribution order based upon things that happened that we never had notice of, and there's no evidence before you to say that we had notice of it. That, very simply, is wrong. Of course it's wrong. How can you hold us to that?
Do we have jurisdiction to do anything about that?
Well, what you have jurisdiction to do is to say whether or not the Copyright Royalty Board's decision was arbitrary and capricious, and if it ought to be sent back to the Copyright Royalty Board for further proceedings. And that's what we're asking.
You see in the brief, they tell us this was determination of non-controversy, and that's not the type of determination that's subject to our review. It's not a proceeding. For all the reasons you said, there's not notice of it, there's not a proceeding, there's not publication in the Federal Register.
Well, but here's the problem, is that it is a final determination because it did terminate IPG's rights. And if they're correct, then how in what case is IPG able to object to it? Let me put it a different way. Final determination, by virtue of a bogus settlement agreement, should be appealable in no different way than final determination after a fully litigated distribution proceeding. Now, we didn't have a fully litigated distribution proceeding here because the CRB concluded there was a settlement agreement, and therefore it just needed a rubber stamp. And what we say is, wait, that's not fair because there is no valid settlement agreement.
So the whole predicate for your jurisdictional, both your merits and your jurisdictional arguments is that there's a bogus settlement agreement, but you haven't established anywhere. You haven't gone and gotten that settlement agreement invalidated. You haven't gone to court like you did with the 2004 agreement.
Because we didn't even know about it until the motion, until we opposed the motion. But if I may, it's not that the settlement agreement is not our sword; it's their sword. In other words, if they want to say no, IPG may not litigate its claims in 2008 cable proceeding, they have to be the ones to say they can't do it because here there's a settlement agreement.
No, I don't think that's right. I think you have to establish jurisdiction. And it sounds to me like you would concede that if it were a valid settlement agreement and they had done a distribution pursuant to what they routinely do, they find no controversy, they just distribute for the settlement agreement, we would have no jurisdiction to review anything. Is that correct?
I think that is correct.
Okay, so you need to establish jurisdiction. You have to, under your theory, if your theory is correct, show me that this is a bogus settlement agreement. And this is not the forum to decide that. That should be done.
Well, let me also point something out. I disagree for the reasons I've stated. I think it's their burden to use it, not our burden to blow it up. But more importantly, let's remember this.
It's your burden to establish jurisdiction, correct?
No question about it. Okay. I'm simply saying that I don't think that that was necessary to establish jurisdiction. And let me also, if I may, unless you have more questions.
No, I really do want to hear how you established jurisdiction then.
We established jurisdiction because what happened here was the Copyright Royalty Board said, you, IPG, don't have any ability, or excuse me, let me back up. The Copyright Royalty Board said, we're ordering a final distribution of 1998 cable based upon a motion by the settling devotional claimants and others. We said, no, you can't do that because we never gave up we never agreed to a settlement of that, so we have to have a proceeding where there's an adversarial proceeding, and IPG argues its case, and the settling devotional claimants argue their case. We have to have that proceeding. And the Copyright Royalty Board said, no, we're not having that proceeding. This is over, and you have no further ability to talk about it because we're approving this motion. And in the first instance, they said, we're approving this motion. because there was a settlement agreement, and because in 2003, the librarian entered an order saying this is all over and done with. We then, on our motion for reconsideration, said, what are you talking about? We had no notice of the 2003 decision by
I mean, I got the fact that really got your position on not the bogus settlement and not having notice, but where textually in the statute, if you just look at 803 with me, what is the statutory basis for jurisdiction over your claim that there should be a formal proceeding in which we get a formal determination that courts can review? Essentially, you're saying you should be in that procedural avenue, and they're saying we're not in that procedural avenue. We only have jurisdiction review when they are in that procedural avenue, is their argument.
And what I'm saying is this, is that, the question, I mean, if I don't know if you agree with me, my reading of it is, the question is it a final determination? I think that's the way to characterize it as well. They're saying this is not a final determination, and what I'm saying is, it is a final determination, and then what they say back is, it's not a final determination because the librarian said there's no controversy.
No, I think as a concern to them, if you look at 803D, right, you have to have a determination isn't enough. It has to be a determination under subsection C, and then there has to be a publication of the determination to trigger a 30-day period, and it has to be brought by a participant in the proceeding under subsection B2. So just showing a final determination is your. Under this provision, at least, under 803D, I don't know how you say you fit within that for judicial review.
Well, say you go somewhere I guess the question is, why is it that what's happened here is not a final determination?
I don't know if that's not, because we have to have, whether it's a final determination in the abstract or not, doesn't give us jurisdiction under 803D. What we have jurisdiction under 803D is a final determination under subsection C, and the other things I mentioned, publication, participant in the proceeding.
And I guess what I'm saying is this is that in effect. And because, see, in effect, that's my point. My point is it is that in effect. And that's not, and there's a very good reason why it ought to be viewed that way. And the reason is that if you, in the alternative, there's no there's no ability to appeal anything like this.
You say an alternative grounds for jurisdiction is under the APA. If that were correct, you're just in the wrong court.
I don't believe. Why would we be in the wrong
district court?
Understood.
To the extent that this is a statute that gives us jurisdiction over a very limited type of proceeding, not simply a final determination.
That is correct. The problem with the alternative grounds, there are problems with it, let me just say that. And that's why we were focusing primarily on 803. I think you've seen and you understand clearly the other argument, but correct, it would be initially to the district court. But just to get back to the point I was finishing with Judge Millett, if this does not have the same effect, then the librarian could basically eliminate the ability for a party to seek judicial review, as is contemplated by the statute, simply by saying there's no controversy.
But maybe the non-controversy determination is what gets adjudicated, as Judge Rogers said, under the APA in district court or a mandamus action. The proceeding you're supposed to be having, as opposed to us.
Here's the thing: is that there's some question as to whether or not these proceedings really are properly characterized as under the Register of Copyrights as opposed to the librarian. So there's some question as to whether or not that APA route is even available. If it is, it's chancy. Let me put it that way. No, in fact, what we need to have is there needs to be a way to appeal these decisions. Under 803.
Why don't you read the intercollegiate case as creating APA jurisdiction over the Librarian of Congress?
I'm glad you asked that question because I got the order, of course. I read the intercollegiate decision more than once, and I couldn't understand its applicability, and I guess now I begin to. I guess the point is that based on that, the point would be any of these things, you can just go ahead and appeal directly to district court. Your point, correct?
Yeah. I have a point for just asking a question, but the question is there's a decision there that says, you know, based on separation of powers, y'all might have thought the Library of Congress wasn't an agency, but we're here to tell you, at a minimum, that it is. The librarian is the head of a department within the executive branch, removable by the president. And so the question is, that, does that mean that they are an agency that you could sue under the APA?
And just go directly to district court. Mm-hmm. Well, didn't look like that before. Obviously, the decision is what it is, and I understand your logic of it. Obviously, it didn't occur to us.
But I think you've also, you have argued for APA review. I mean, Judge Rogers said,
we did, but we didn't make that argument in our brief.
Did you think about mandamus for, hey, you're supposed to be having this proceeding? I mean, the problem here seems to be they say, we only have these types of proceedings, only those can get reviewed, and we're not having one of those proceedings. And you go, are you kidding me? You have to have one of those proceedings because everything you've done has the same consequences if you had done one of those proceedings.
Well, here's the problem. Arguably, they don't have to have those proceedings if there's been a settlement. And they were saying, oh, no, there's been a settlement. And we were saying, well, no, there has. And they said, well, no, there has, and that's the end of it. And now we order's made, you're done. There's nothing else you can do. So the trouble is, I mean, I suppose we could have done gone the mandamus route. It seemed more direct to simply appeal the decision, which is premised on, from our perspective, an arbitrary and capricious analysis, basically saying we're not going to listen to what you are saying, IPG, that this agreement was bogus, number one. And also, here's the other thing, too, about, I mean, kind of got cut off of this, but it's important to go back to for a second. We filed a motion for reconsideration, which is also before the court. In the motion for reconsideration, the CRB did an interesting thing. They essentially punted the whole point about the agreement and said, well, forget about the agreement, whether it was binding or non-binding. The real reason that we're granting this motion is that in 2003, the librarian concluded that this was all settled and done with. And that's almost verbatim their wording. It was decided then in 2003, to which we said, wait a minute, no, we had no notice of that. It wasn't published in the Federal Register. So, in a sense, arguably the only thing actually before you, because they have modified their position in reaction to the motion for reconsideration, is the question of whether or not IPG can't pursue this any further because of a order that was entered in 2003 that IPG wasn't given notice of and wasn't published in the Federal Register.
No,
they're saying that ended it all.
It's a little bit fair to the Librarian Congress, you're right. Decades passed. They get a settlement agreement. They don't have any capacity to look behind it and see if there's a fight going on inside any company. They do it. No one objects. Someone on behalf of IPG had signed off on this. And off we go. They do the distribution. If you've got a problem now with the person who signed off on that, and that's between you, and you go get your damages, the money you should have gotten from them is a damages action.
Well, Your Honor.
Is that a better route for all this?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the fact of the matter is, let's remember, notice is a big deal here. Had IPG gotten notice of that 2003 order, of course. But IPG didn't get notice of it. Okay? And because IPG didn't get notice of it, when IPG finally...
Who got the check? Did you or... I need to back up and ask a fact question. Is this your claim to the royalties, or are you an agent for... I forget, other ministry that...
We're an assignee. But the money did not go to an IPG bank account. We've had a difficult time...
Bank account, did the check pass through any IPG hands?
Not that we know of, but we don't know. I mean, and I have to qualify it because... They haven't shared any of this with us. We have one indication that some money went to an attorney.
IPG records from the time? If you have a dispute like this, wouldn't you go back and examine the records and see what Ms. Oshita signed off on and what she got?
And we don't have complete records because we just don't, but Ms. Oshita made off with some of the records and we don't have them. And I don't even know that she made off with them. Maybe she never had them in the first place. But we don't have those records. And we have never had any notice. And that's why I'm... that's why we had no notice.
So why isn't a lawsuit against Ms. Oshita your better remedy here?
Well, for all kinds of reasons. Ms. Oshita has been in hiding for a number of years. We've tried to serve her with a contempt motion. We haven't been able to find her. There's all kinds of various reasons that really are, I don't know if they're the concern here, but there are a lot of practical reasons why that is not a realistic option.
Well, that makes this Librarian of Congress's problem. The Librarian of Congress does what it does all the time. I assume they'll tell me that they do this frequently. They get these settlement agreements. They go, good, no dispute, out it goes.
Well, Your Honor, no problem. But if someone comes back later on and says, wait a minute, this was based on an incorrect and invalid agreement.
But how much later on, right? You're way outside the APA statute of limitations here.
Well, if the party doesn't, obviously it should spring from the party gaining notice by publication in the Federal Register, for instance, or by notice. This is why many of these things, by statute and by practice, are published in the Federal Register, because then the agency can say, look, it was published in the Federal Register. All right, you know what? Yeah, sure, it may have been difficult to look down all those things and see it, but it was there, so it's constructive notice. And if it were, I wouldn't be here in front of you, but it wasn't.
I know, but I guess that may make perfect sense, but Congress has said what gets published in the Federal Register in C-6, and what it says gets published in the Federal Register is a determination on a controversy after a proceeding.
And what happens if it's never published? Then the party's just out scouting.
That would be that some other case. If you have a controversy after a proceeding and they publish, don't publish the Federal Register, people can fight over that. But
well, there was no publication here.
The only thing that, because you didn't have a controversy and a proceeding. That's the problem. Congress has said you don't have to publish when there's a non-controversy.
But this is circular. We're saying there is a controversy, and there always was. And the librarian is saying, no, we declared there's no controversy. That's why I was saying beforehand it would be unfair to defeat jurisdiction simply by a declaration by the librarian that there's no controversy, because what if someone disagrees and says, wait a minute, there is a controversy. I'm standing here saying there's a controversy. If they eliminate our ability to appeal simply by saying, no, there's no controversy, we're not having a proceeding, well, that then has the same effect as a final determination.
There's no time limit then. You could come back 30 years after a distribution and say, whoa, first I heard about this. You should have published it in the Federal Register 30 years ago.
And what would be unjust about that? I mean, the fact of the matter is, if a party is wrong and they never have notice of it, this is why we have discovery rules on statutes of limitations.
Also, statutes of limitations, precisely because someone comes out on the losing end of any given statute of limitations, and it's because there are two parties to any dispute, and someone's entitled to repose. Congress said 6 years for APA claims, and Congress said the only thing you have to publish in the Federal Register is a controversy. Nobody said it was a controversy for 6 years.
But, Your Honor, then what is a party supposed to do when an agency says there's no controversy, they publish nothing in the Federal Register, and an injustice is done? I guess we just let the injustice pass?
Well,
I mean, that's the logical conclusion.
Now, you yourself have identified alternative means, at least on the books, could be available to you. All right, in your brief. But you have not asked us to turn this into a mandamus proceeding. Why don't we hear from appellees?
Good morning. Sonia McNeil for the United States. May it please the Court, I'd like to start with the jurisdictional issue, if I may. Congress did not provide for direct review in this court of everything that the copyright royalty judges do, only of one specific thing, determinations under 803C. The orders IPG challenges here are not determinations under 803C, and here I think it's helpful to take a step back to understand why. Every year, people that use certain kinds of copyrighted material pay royalties into an account maintained by the Register and the Treasury. Every year, copyright owners must tell the copyright royalty judges whether they believe they have a claim to this money. Then the judges decide whether there is a controversy about how the royalty should be distributed. And if the parties settle the distribution of the royalties, then the judges disperse the royalties to the parties.
So you guys are sitting there with this pot of money. How is it initiated? Do you all first say, we're ready to deal with the 1998 pot of money? Or do the people out there who know they have an interest in that pot of money, is it on them to sort of come to you and say, hey, we know you've got the money, let's have a proceeding?
Well, Your Honor, I do think that it's the responsibility of the parties who have an interest in money that's being held by the Copyright Office to let the copyright royalty judges know whether
is
they have a claim.
Is there a procedure? Do you file a piece of paper?
Well, in this case, in January of 2008, the copyright royalty judges published in the Federal Register at 73 Federal Register 5596, which is cited in our brief, a notice saying that they were interested in hearing from parties who believed they had claims to the money for this year, whether there was an outstanding controversy.
All right. So they took the initiative. There's nothing to file. I just want to be clear with what the procedure is.
Well,
so
every
at
year,
least as of 2008?
Well, every year, parties must, so in this case, for the 1999 royalties, the parties must file a claim with the Copyright Office within a timely fashion to let them know that they believe that they have an interest in the pool. But in this case...
Did you do that?
So far, I don't believe that's in the record, Your Honor. I have no reason to believe that they did not.
Okay.
And by timely, what do you mean?
Well, the statute...
The
statute provides, and here I'm on page A1 of our appendix 111D4A, that during the month of July in each year, every person claiming to be entitled to statutory license fees for secondary transmissions, which are the types of royalties at issue in this case, shall file a claim with the Copyright Royalty.
All right. So you have to file by July...
Yes, Your Honor.
Of every year?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
And we assume they did that here. We're assuming they did. You don't dispute that they did.
I don't dispute that, no.
All right.
But then nothing really starts until you all, I guess now it's the judges, say, now we're ready to deal with 1998's pool of money.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's how the formal proceedings start. They can't essentially file a complaint and initiate that proceeding. It's passive. They have to wait for you all to start.
That's correct, Your Honor, but the statute requires the judges to start that proceeding very soon. 111D4B provides that after the first day of August each year, the copyright royalty judges have to determine whether there exists a controversy concerning the distribution of royalty fees. These distributions happen, as we've described in our brief, in two phases. At the first phase, phase one, all of the copyright owners within different types of copyrighted content, categories of copyrighted content, litigate the division of the entire pool to all members of that group. And then at phase two, which is the phase that is at issue in that case before this court, owners with claims to the same type of royalties, so here religious broadcast programming royalties, litigate among themselves or try to decide amongst themselves whether or not they can reach a settlement as to the subdivision of their slice of the pie. If and only if the judges find that there is a controversy, then they conduct a proceeding, and a proceeding which is like...
The problem here is what happens when someone disagrees with your finding of no controversy. That controversy, non-controversy decision seems pretty important because it really affects the entire proceedings and maybe judicial review. And so what happens if the judges say no controversy, but it turns out somebody's going, yes, there is.
Well, of course, Your Honor, a finding of no controversy is a finding. And so if there were parties before the judges saying, yes, there is a controversy, I think that in practice it would come out differently. But their remedy is in state court.
How would it come out differently? I'm positing here that they've said, for whatever reason, they lost someone's claims.
Well,
or they thought they agreed, and then the distribution didn't go the way they thought they had agreed to. And so someone goes, wait, that's not what we agreed to. There's a controversy here.
Well, at that point, the party's remedy is in state court. It is not before this court.
In state court against the Librarian of Congress or the judges?
Well, if they don't believe that they entered, if they believe that there was some problem with the settlement agreement that they entered, then their resort is against the other parties with whom they settled in state court.
Doesn't have their money. You all have their money.
Not once it's been distributed, Your Honor. If the judges find that there is no controversy, then they must.
No, but that's the point. The hypothetical is the judges know there is a controversy. And they say, we decide there's no controversy. What do you do?
Your Honor, that decision still is not a determination under 803C. Your Honor, it is not subject to direct review under 803D in this court.
Where do you go?
Your Honor, I suppose in extraordinary circumstances there might be another remedy available, but IPG, as it has just explained, has not sought mandamus or any other form of extraordinary relief.
So maybe one of the special writs?
Are you conceding that mandamus would be available?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. I think it's very difficult to... posit, particularly in a case where a party, as IPG has just explained, has not sought mandamus. But anyway, in any hypothetical case, that a right to a writ would be clear and indisputable. Perhaps there would be instances where it would be more clear and subject to less serious dispute than it is here, but that's simply not this case.
There would be already existence of a controversy, and
right.
That's not going to be enough to get mandamus.
Right.
So what do we do? What does the party do?
Your Honor, if the party believes that there's some defect with the settlement, and that
I filed a claim, but I'm not a party to that settlement agreement. and the judges go, we've got a settlement agreement,
right,
that's what we're following.
Your Honor, Congress has only provided for direct review in this court of determinations under 803C, notwithstanding that it recognized that the judges did other things, including issuing regulations.
So we have a pretty strong presumption in favor of judicial review, so shouldn't, what stops us from reading 803D to say that at a minimum, if there's a controversy over whether there's a controversy, that also falls in with 803D?
Your Honor, I don't think that there is any support in the text for that reading, and in
where
fact what happened...
What are we violating by doing that? Copyright judges shall issue their determination. Their determination is there's no controversy. It will be supported by a written record. The record will be whatever papers they decided that there was no controversy based on. You all were supposed to publish it, but that's your problem. If you didn't publish it, it's not their problem. You can't strip someone of judicial review by not publishing the Federal Register when you should.
Of course not, Your Honor, but I think the fact that these orders were not published only goes to underscore that the judges didn't understand themselves to be conducting a determination under 803C.
But I'm telling you, if we have a controversy over controversy, what part of 803C's trigger for jurisdiction is not satisfied?
Well, Your Honor, I think that one cannot look at the text of 803C without coming away with the unmistakable impression that this is through and through about contested proceedings.
Uh-huh, and we've got a very contested proceeding here. This was very contested.
Indeed, Your Honor, and it was because that there was a dispute about the distribution of the program supplier's royalties that the judges stayed the proceedings upon the motion of the parties
so
in 2008 to go to state court.
Right.
In a different category of funds, Your Honor. These funds are separated, and the one has no relation to the other. In fact, IPG concedes in its brief that the distribution of the program supplier's royalties simply has no bearing on the issues in this case.
We're trying to decide what the proper rule of law is here, and one can imagine many hypotheticals in which you would have, within a controversy, people would think things are separate, someone would think something's not separate, and they'd want to dispute that.
Indeed, but nonetheless, Congress has provided a mechanism for direct review in this court.
Well, can you just look at me with 803C and tell me what part of 803C, other than publication in the Federal Register, deprive us of the ability to review the controversy over controversy?
Well, of course, controversy, whether or not there exists a controversy, is a factual finding, and a determination that is published in the Federal Register must first be reviewed by the Register of Copyrights under 802F1D for legal error.
Mm-hmm.
The copyright royalty judges, in fact, are prohibited from seeking the opinion of the Register of Copyrights on questions of fact. The order here is simply not the sort of determination. It's not a determination under 803C, and there's no reason to think that...
Tell me how it's not a determination under 803C.
It's not a determination under 803C because it did not follow a contested proceeding. And if and only if there is a contested proceeding...
The contested proceeding would be them saying, hey, you should find this to be a controversy.
Your Honor, I guess I'd like to answer this question by taking a step back. Hear what the judges said. Was that 2012 was too late to raise for the first time objections to an order that had been entered in 2003 under a prior statutory scheme.
Or maybe they might be a statute of limitations argument, it might be a latches argument, but I just want to deal with how this judicial review scheme works. So put away time issues.
Okay.
And assume we're just in a world where the judges have said, no controversy, we're going to disperse pursuant to the settlement agreement. And IPG or someone else is standing there going, no, there's very much a controversy. We're not a part of that settlement agreement. We have a claim.
Your Honor, if the judges find that there is no controversy, they do not conduct a contested proceeding, and they do not issue a determination under 803C, and that is the only order that is reviewable in this court.
And where is that in the text?
Well,
all it says is a determination, and it is actually, there's 111 other language that talks about a determination of whether there's a controversy or not. So that's a form of determination.
Of course, Your Honor, the judges make
any
number of determinations, but 803D refers to a determination under subsection C.
Right.
And subsection C contemplates contested proceedings, subsection C1.
Right, and this is a contested proceeding.
Your Honor, it is not because the judges only open a proceeding if they first find that there are royalties in controversy. Here, the judges found, based on the 2003 order of the librarian, which I would add it was far from clear that they had the authority to reconsider, even if they would have wished to have done so under 803A.
So in Judge Millett's hypothetical, is a party's only avenue of relief mandamus?
Your Honor, I couldn't speculate on whether mandamus relief would be available to that party. I think that
but
insofar...
we're trying to understand the argument would be that the judges have just acted beyond their authority, that there is a controversy, that he has a clear right to this proceeding, that he is being denied. That would be the allegation, presumably, in a petition for mandamus. I mean, just hypothetically, assume that, you know, the board is not doing what the statute says it's supposed to do.
Your Honor, there may, in extraordinary circumstances, be an extraordinary...
My hypothetical.
Your Honor, I cannot speculate.
You don't really care if Congress says you have to hold a proceeding when there's a controversy, if the agency to which Congress has delegated this authority just puts its head in the sand and said, we never have any controversies, so we never have to hold any proceedings. Distribute the money.
Your Honor, I think it's clear in this case that the judges cared deeply about whether or not there was, in fact, a controversy.
This is a hypothetical. I'm trying to get you to answer.
I understand, Your Honor.
And you don't want to answer.
Your Honor, I cannot give you an answer about whether or not mandamus relief would be available in a case where, as we stand here, the party has not sought mandamus. They've explained that they didn't seek mandamus because they didn't think that they would be successful. The doctrine
latches. Well, the argument in this brief is that there was a de facto determination. And I thought that's what Judge Millett's questions were pursuing.
I understand that that is their argument, Your Honor, but whether something constitutes a determination under 803C is not a functional inquiry. Congress recognized that the judges did things other than issue determinations, and they provided, nonetheless, for a mechanism of direct review in this court solely of determinations
decide,
under 803C.
How do they decide there's not a controversy? Someone must submit a settlement. They must say, hey, we have a controversy, you all got a settlement agreement. And someone must submit a settlement agreement to them.
Yes, sir. Your Honor, if there's a facially valid settlement agreement, and in fact, here in this case, it was upon a joint motion of the parties in November of 2003, that the Register recommended that there was no controversy remaining regarding the distribution of the 1998 religious broadcasting
your
royalties.
Your motion sounds to me like a proceeding. You've got
no,
a
Your Honor.
You've got a proceeding. You've got a record.
No, Your Honor.
I mean, I know your position is no, but you're going to have to tell me why that's not a proceeding. Or it's not a record. It might be a teeny record, but a motion to me sounds like a proceeding. Where did Congress say, given the strong presumption in favor of judicial review, that motion does not constitute a proceeding in 803C?
Because, Your Honor, a proceeding must be preceded by a finding that funds are in controversy. A motion submitted to the judges. Well, I refer the court to page A1 of our appendix and 111D4B. As we've discussed, the copyright royalty judges must determine whether there exists a controversy concerning. Determine, yes. Not a determination under 803C, but they must make a decision about whether there exists a controversy concerning the distribution of royalty fees. If they determine that no controversy exists, then they shall authorize the distribution of those fees.
The library process to proceed. So there's a determination and proceeding. I mean, I understand how you put it together. I'm just telling you that it doesn't seem so textually compelled that it overcomes the strong presumption in favor of judicial review.
Your Honor, I think, again, the clear text of 803D is that Congress intended to provide a mechanism for direct review in this court only of determinations under 803C, despite knowing that the judges did other things. They issued regulations, they made findings about the existence of a controversy. Nonetheless, Congress has provided for review in this court only of one type of order by specific parties within a specific time.
I thought there was review over the regulations as well.
That's in district court, Your Honor.
Right, but there's review. So the only thing that Congress didn't give judicial review of is this controversy determination.
Your Honor, I can't say that the only sort of thing that over which there would be no judicial review would be a no controversy determination, but it's certainly the case that here there is no review over a no controversy determination.
What about APA review? Is the Librarian of Congress now an agency after intercollegiate for purposes of the APA?
No, Your Honor. And first and foremost, IPG has asserted 803D only as its basis for jurisdiction. And so this argument is not before this court. This has been waived. And it is also, I would add, not open to this panel to decide that the Library of Congress is an agency within the meaning of the APA. That is foreclosed by Supreme Court precedent. It is foreclosed by prior decisions of this panel. Congress can and has relied on those court's holdings. to decide now that the Library of Congress is an agency within the meaning of the APA would render multiple portions of the statute superfluous. So even if this argument had not been waived, which of course it has, it's simply not an avenue for this court. And I would add, the question whether the Library of Congress is an agency within the meaning of the APA really only goes to, I suppose, the discretionary decision of this court to transfer the case to district court or not. And since transfers are in the interest of justice, and IPG has not sought such a transfer, I would submit it's not appropriate for this court to do so.
And why is the Library of Congress now under intercollegiate? We now had a whole constitutional sort of sea change in the status of the Library of Congress that didn't exist at the time of our prior precedent or when the Supreme Court was talking about FOIA. Why isn't that sufficient to make them an agency?
Because, Your Honor, it's well established that the treatment of an agency for constitutional and statutory purposes need not be the same. This argument was raised before the panel in the intercollegiate broadcasting case. The government expressly argued that the panel in that case did not need to go en banc to overrule its prior decisions holding that the Library of Congress was not an APA agency, and there is simply no reason, and I would submit to this court, it is not open to revisit that question now. I'm glad to address the merits questions if Your Honor has questions.
So the APA is closed.
Yes, Your Honor, except right. Where Congress has specifically provided in the statute.
So because he hasn't requested mandamus, we shouldn't address that.
Yes, Your Honor, this is waived.
The language that you reviewed with Judge Millett is simply not enough for us to have jurisdiction.
Your Honor, in this case, I doubt the court would even get that far because I think latches would bar mandamus relief. Moreover, I would add that IPG did not
seek...
Well,
it all depends whether we give credence to his no-notice argument.
Your Honor, if the court wishes, I can direct you to the parts of the record that demonstrate that IPG, in fact, had notice of this settlement. But leaving that question aside...
You mean because somebody signed on behalf of IPG?
IPG's president, Your Honor.
Signed? Was that, I can't remember who it was.
Marion Oshita, Your Honor.
Yes, and that's the person who it turns out later was determined not to be in a position to be president.
Your Honor, what the record contains is a jury verdict from a California trial decision stating that as of January 26th of 2005, many years after the 2003 right. settlement was entered into, that a different person was awarded as of that date authority over the company. There's simply no evidence in the record to suggest that Marion Oshita lacked authority to enter the settlement agreement in 2003.
In the sense she had apparent authority.
She is their president. I don't believe there's any dispute that she at least had a significant economic interest in the company. And so, I believe absolutely apparent authority.
Can I just ask a fact question? How often does this happen where you have controversies over the controversy determination? Things come up afterwards. People say, hey, that wasn't the right person. Is this the only time it's ever happened, or have disputes like this arisen for whatever reason about non-controversy determination distribution?
Your Honor, to my knowledge, this is the first time in the history of this scheme that it has happened. And by hypothesis, when parties enter a settlement agreement, they have settled, and they have settled for the express purpose of having their royalties distributed to them without being subjected to the time and expense of a contested proceeding, the sort of proceeding that would produce a determination reviewable in this court under 803D.
And then the interveners have a footnote in their brief. Footnote 1 makes it sound to me like they have a slightly different view of jurisdiction than you do.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so what do you understand the difference to be, and can you comment on why they're right or wrong?
Your Honor, I don't believe that their interpretation is correct. I understand their footnote to be saying that there exists a type of order that would be reviewed by the Register of Copyrights and published in the Federal Register by the Librarian of Congress, but that would not follow a contested proceeding. That would nonetheless be a determination under 803C. I think, for the reasons that we've discussed, that there can't be any doubt that a determination under 803C must follow from a contested proceeding, and should there be doubt, I would refer the court to 803D1, which provides that review of a determination may only be by a party who fully participated in a contested proceeding. And so I don't think that that their theory, which I guess is that Congress provided for some type of order that would be a determination, but yet no party would be able to challenge it. I just don't think that that's the correct reading of the statute.
Anything further?
No, Your Honor. We ask that the court dismiss the case.
All right. Counsel for appellant.
Your Honors, I'll be brief. Based on your questions, I think you understand the back alley we're trying to be shoved into here jurisdictionally. I won't go further into that unless there are more questions. One point I do want to bring up is that with regard to the issue about whether or not IPG did have notice or didn't, IPG did not have notice. Mayor Marinoshita was entitled president. She was not a majority owner of the company. Notice was given to various parties when we knew she was dealing with other parties, but we didn't always know what she was doing. What should happen here is what happened with the MPA and the program suppliers category. When the CRB said, okay, let's have this proceeding, and that is the way it works. And IPG announced its intent to participate in the program suppliers category at that time. MPAA came up and said, no, IPG can't do that. We have a settlement agreement with them that we signed with Marinoshita. And we said, no, she had no authority. And we filed a suit. The proceedings were held up. Now, it's curious. At that same time, the settling devotional claimants did not make the same argument for some reason. They did not say at that time, oh, we have a settlement agreement, so IPG can't participate. They waited 4 years until August of 2012 before they brought the motion that's the subject of this proceeding. That's the only time we found out. And at that point, when we said, hey, we didn't know about that, CRB should have done what they did back in 2008 with regard to the motion or the program suppliers category. With regard to the state court judgment that adjudicated what exactly Marinoshita's status was, it did not say that as of January 2005, she was not a majority owner. What it says, and it requires reading the judgment, but what it says is by operation of California and Texas state law on limited liability company transfers of ownership, she never became a majority owner because the transaction upon which she premised her theory that she was a majority owner was invalid.
Didn't it also hold that settlement agreement she signed was valid, the 2004 one was binding on IPG?
It was held. Your Honor. What happened was we lost that on a state court statute of limitations argument.
Wouldn't you have the same problem here for the 2003 settlement agreement?
Well, I don't think so. The facts were different, frankly. And they had facts that we knew about it. They were disputed. It went up and down on the court. There were two appellate decisions on that one. But there was no conclusion on the merits. And for what it's worth, I mean, I did all this stuff. The trial judge repeatedly said in oral arguments things to the effect of, I can see she didn't have any authority, but I want to know why it is you didn't file this and this here. That was ultimately what we lost, not on the substance.
How can we file a lawsuit for the 2003 settlement
agreement? I'm sorry?
How can we have a file a lawsuit for the 2003 settlement agreement?
You mean essentially a debt relief action?
Mm-hmm.
First we knew about it was with this motion. The first thing we had to do was oppose this motion.
What year was that?
That was last year. It was 2012 when this motion was filed. And then the ruling came down January 31st of 2013.
No, wait for it. You've got notice. Then file a lawsuit.
Well, we will.
You did it last time, right?
Well, yes, but Your Honor, we've been told we can't. At this point, we've been told even if we do file a lawsuit, it won't make any difference because this is over. So sure, you know, if it goes back, if you reverse that decision, we'll file it the next day. But why are we going to go spending the time, money, and effort filing a lawsuit if we can't even get anywhere if we win it? I mean. You have to understand the practicalities of
that. You have to understand you had some time period where you had notice of this problem before the judges ruled in this case. That ruling in 2013, you had notice in 2012, you had time to go file that lawsuit, and that's exactly what you did in the other situation.
Well,
maybe the reason you didn't do it is you know what the answer is going to be. You're going to be stuck with this settlement agreement as well as the other one.
No, that's not it, Your Honor. No, it's because we saw no point in filing a lawsuit if the CRB was simply going to enter this order, and if this order was entered, we could waste all kinds of time, money, and effort in that lawsuit, and we could even win it, and it wouldn't make any difference if this order stood. I mean, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, just file lawsuits. It costs money, time, and effort to do it, and it's ridiculous to require us to file a lawsuit on something which will be a complete waste of time if this order isn't overturned first.
All right. I think we have your argument. We will take the case under advisement.
Thank you, Your Honor.